This is NBA Talk. I'm Eric Torenberg, joined by special guest Dan Bardo, head of player development at IMG Academy, along with my co-hosts Ruben Torenberg and Frack. Let's dive in.
What's up, guys?
Happy next day.
Happy Friday, man. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well,
how are you feeling? Sir,
I'm feeling on a high. I mean, it was so close to going to game seven. If it was going to game seven, I was going to be at Madison Square Garden on Saturday. I'm in New York right now. I'm extending my trip to Tuesday to see if I can make game one. Because we maybe would have lost game seven. I actually agree with Nick Nurse that there's a chance it could have gone the other way. Two great teams. I think Sixers, I was telling Ruben, I think Sixers are one of the best teams like in the playoffs. Like maybe I'm trying to congratulate the Knicks too much, but I think after the three best teams in the West and then the Celtics and then the Knicks, I think Sixers might be there.
What a game.
Incredible game.
Tobias Harris.
I told you, man, this guy's making $30 million, $39 million a year.
His contract was 180 mil.
I mean, he only had like two shots, I think.
0 for 2. He had as many points as me in 29 minutes.
Well, you know how I feel about this from pickup basketball. If you don't shoot, I don't have a problem. Like, it's when you miss and you make turnovers and you don't play D, that's the problem. Unless they weren't guarding him, but I actually think they were guarding him.
He had the OG matchup.
OG, that's tough. Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, like, you know, in the beginning of the first episode, like what happens to Tobias Harris, and Dan was like, oh, well, some team who wants perimeter shooting, you know, hopefully picks him up. But at what price point? I mean, I don't know what a Tobias Harris contract looks like anymore. I think he's like, I wonder if he's a Gordon Hayward type, just like bench player for a, you know, growing team.
He's only like 30.
Feels like the game has passed him by. Maybe I'm being too much of a Tobias hater.
It's rough right now for Tobias Harris. Just played himself out of a lot of money.
Okay, here we go, boy. What's up, Deadass B? Welcome to the Knicks podcast. We're here to talk about New York. I got my Tim's on. I got my chopped cheese. I'm ready.
What does that guy do? Like,
I don't know what you're watching, man.
The 1 minute video where the Knicks fans just going crazy, like, fuck Trae Young.
Knicks, there's another one. Compilation. Just yelling, Embiid is a bitch.
Kevin Durant, do you regret not coming to the Knicks? Speaking of Kevin Durant, we got a lot to talk about. Maybe let's start real quick with 76ers. What happens now in the offseason? Is Embiid gone? Do they try to rebuild again? Dan, I'll start with you. What do you think happens, and what would you do if you were running the Sixers?
I think you'd promise Embiid that you're going to have somebody else there for 2 years. In joking about guys only being 30 years old, I think that the trend is going to be a lot more two-year max deal with maybe a player option, or a 1 year max deal with a team option if it's just backfilling a need. You know, I mean, we laughed about Tobias Harris, but again, he has some value to somebody that might overpay him if he says, you know what, I'll play it out. I believe in myself. I'll play 2 years and then try to get another contract after that. I think clearly they need a little bit more shooting because obviously Harris and Hield are going to be gone. Teams will adjust to Maxey a little bit next year, and I think you have to proactively plan for that. But again, I would not go all in on a Paul George type or a Jimmy Butler type in that 2-year deal. I don't think these guys that have not produced in the playoffs are a worthwhile risk when you have, I don't want to call them Embiid and Maxi alphas, but I think the third wheel can't get in their way. The third player, fourth player can't get in their way. Maybe they can put somebody over in year two or year three of this project, but it needs to be complementary more than it needs to be equal.
Do they need an OG Anunoby type?
Everyone needs that.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
It's rare to have stars that are like just defensive star that are not big guys. Like how many players like OG are there in the NBA? It's like Draymond Green.
Yeah, like I mean, do you try to grab DeJounte Murray now? You know, somebody that like I'm just using that as an example because he was the big conversation of potentially the Lakers making that move, and. No, obviously, he's a guy that would complement the. He doesn't really defend, but does he give you that balance to Maxi and Embiid, or do you go after some? Do you go after Jimmy and run it back and give him the money that he wants for 4 years, knowing that it's going to be a team option in the fourth year, and you might have to just trade him in year three if things don't go well, but he's going to give you a defensive presence more so than an offensive presence.
You think it's more likely Jimmy leaves Miami or Embiid goes to Miami? Probably neither, but.
I think it's more likely Jimmy leaves.
Really?
Yeah, because he wants 4 years at max money.
Is he about to have a contract here coming out?
It's like an extension, right? He's up for an extension.
I think he's up for an extension. So he's not.
And that's been the talk. Like you have the couple of these guys are up for these extensions. And that becomes the, I think at the Suns are in the same boat with, I don't know if it's Durant or Booker. Like if you know you're not going to be able to extend the guy, then you just mutually part ways. You know, that's going to be a hotter trend this summer than before. I think Embiid stays. I think Daryl Morey and Embiid are on the same. Like, they're benefiting each other right now. I could see this being Embiid's last year, but I think he'll stick it out. He's become – why would you give up being a top three guy for a risk? But for both Jimmy and Embiid, I'm not looking at the x-rays of their knees or their ankles or their shoulder. Like, we don't really know how beat up these guys are either. And maybe they're like, yeah, I'll take 4 years, a little less money. Just I'm going to come right in at about 58 games for the next three years. That's my goal. Give me 80% of what I'm worth and play me 58 games. And that'll help us get another star too.
I got an idea. Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, Bojan Bogdanovic, Alec Burks, and 3 first-round picks, Joel Embiid.
Come on, man. The Knicks are about to win the finals, I thought. Why would you guys need an upgrade?
Yeah. Plus, Embiid's going to ruin the juju that you built.
Well, we
you really think...
anti-Semitic stuff on this podcast, Ruben.
You really think, after watching this first round, that he can last 95 games?
Juju.
No, I don't think he can, but we'll load manage him, play 40 games. You know, we got Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, hopefully we'll keep him. But for the playoff, I mean, he did a great job. Do you not believe in load management, or is that we just can't load manage?
It's not load management. I just don't know if you can win with the way you have to play him defensively. Like, you're not beating Denver, Minnesota. I actually thought that we talked about it in the first podcast. I thought that Philadelphia's best matchup was the Knicks. I think they matched up poorly against most of the other teams that were in the Eastern Conference. And again, it's just, you know, playing guys like that just requires so many concessions. Not saying that he didn't dominate, not saying that he's not the most dominant player on the floor, but can you win 16 playoff games playing a style that's that abnormal? It's like the equivalent of trying to press the whole game.
So say more about what is the style that they play that's so unique, and why are the Knicks like, I would think Knicks are such a good defensive team that you wouldn't want to, why is it a good matchup for Philadelphia?
I just thought, I'm saying, like, I think that they, you know, because Embiid clogged the paint and
Knicks can't shoot.
Again, I think the Knicks benefited from Bogdanovich getting hurt and the three Villanova guys being on the court for 90% of the minutes and being able to play off each other and having the rhythm. And Mitchell Robinson coming back probably helped just enough. I think Philadelphia might have beat them if Bogdanovich played and Robinson didn't. But I don't know if Philadelphia could have beat any of the other seven teams. Just with the amount of times that Brunson's trying to get in the paint and the way that Hart and DiVincenzo play, and obviously, you know, with OG, he is the perfect playoff everybody else guy. Okay, I need to make a shot. I know how to isolate. I know how to space.
Got it. Struggle against scoring teams with who can shoot well?
Scoring teams, and they struggle against guys that make Maxie have to move around a lot and make Maxie really, I mean, he could kind of hide off of some people and didn't really have to fight through tons and tons of stuff, which allowed him to stay fresh. I mean, him and Embiid really didn't guard.
Yeah.
You ready? I got some names for you guys. Potential incoming Sixers. We can all agree Tobias is going to go, right? It's going to get shipped. The depth, Healed is gone.
Why is he gone?
Healed? Because he was two DNPs before this last game in the playoffs when you traded him in a contract year.
Yep. Okay.
We can assume they won't re-sign him, right? Campaign played a lot of minutes. Campaign probably shouldn't be playing that many minutes. My first name, D'Angelo Russell.
It's not terrible. He could shoot.
He could shoot. They need some shooting. And he just makes decisions pretty quick. Sometimes they're crazy decisions, but they're decisions. All right, next name. Miles Bridges.
That's interesting.
Interesting. You're keeping Oubre. You got to keep Oubre. Oubre and Bridges?
With Miles Bridges, they could really beat some teams down, you know?
All right. Let's get a little more presidential with this third guy, Harrison Barnes.
What do you mean presidential?
They call him the president because he's such a stand-up guy.
I think he was on Pat Bev's list of the whitest black players. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did see that. Miles Turner was on there too.
Yeah, someone
Eric, you should do your own version of that list on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. This next one is my favorite one. Well, what do you think about Harrison Barnes? Would it be a nice fit?
I think all of this is so mid, it doesn't move the needle. They go from a 7 seed to a 6 seed.
Okay, how about this one? Tell me if it moves the needle. Alex Caruso.
That's a really good fit, I think. They need
first team all defense.
What I felt in this series is that the Knicks like outscrapped them. Like they need some guys like that to like have some heart and like dog in them, you know?
He's a dog. He's a strong dude. All right. Last one. Just because you need another bucket getter, and maybe you don't because you already have him beat.
DeRozan?
But this guy's up for a contract. DeMar DeRozan?
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Wow, that's some brotherly telepathy right there.
Hey, I see you, big bro.
Is his usage rate too high? Does he need the ball too much?
Great for a clutch situation.
DeRozan, Embiid, and Maxey is like three ball dominant guys, but
yeah, maybe that's not a great fit.
I mean, it's better than all the other guys, I'd say.
Okay. Even Caruso?
I love Caruso.
Caruso's the best fit, but I'm saying DeRozan might like actually help them in the playoffs more. By the way, I love this as a segment. Ruben's free agent, free offseason picks.
This offseason is going to be wild. I think there's going to be a lot of movement.
let's get into that, because Dan hinted at this in the earlier episode. He was like, this offseason is going to be like the biggest, you know, in a long time. Dan, can you unpack what you mean by that? What are the different factors that are happening that will lead to that?
Well, I think three things jump out at me. One, NBA valuations are through the roof. Like, people were literally joking this week that why doesn't Matt Ishbia just sell the Suns now? Like, literally, like, he'd be 2 years out. His tax penalty wouldn't be that bad. It's probably worth $1 billion more than it was when he bought it. And when you, and that's losing. So maybe it doesn't happen, but maybe it would have happened had they won some or made the Western Conference Finals. The guy flips it, first guy to flip an NBA franchise. But point being, when you win, we've just seen such an uptick in valuations for the teams that win. Big influx of private equity. I think 28 teams now have private equity involved in their minority ownership. And then you also have a large part of the new wave of owners that have gone through growing companies, building companies at a very fast rate. And these guys tend to have very aggressive mindsets when it comes to things like valuation, brand, selling tickets, TV rights, local TV rights. So people are going to be naturally taking risks and not looking at the player as a, as much of as human, just as a movable commodity. Second thing is that the agencies that represent these players are in a war. You know, people, they keep taking on money. They keep taking on investors. Their expectations are higher and higher, and they're just getting a bigger rake than they ever got before of these contracts. So they want to try to set the table as much. I'm just using the example today, like Ty Lue's in a bidding war for his next job, and they're not even out of the playoffs. Like, they're talking about the Clippers extending him and the Lakers maybe hiring him, and he has a game to coach tonight. That's going on behind the scenes with all of these players. And again, the big agencies, the Clutch, the CAA, the Wasserman, the XL, these guys are just seeing, they're trying to bury each other. So they want to get the biggest and best deals for their guys. And they also represent front office personnel. And the front office personnel, it's a conflict of interest, in my opinion. These guys, there's just so many closed door agreements ahead of time to move things. And then the last piece is teams have proven that you can go all in on four or five players and balance your roster with two-way players and developable players. Miami Heat did it last year. If you look at the end of the Celtics after player number eight, I think that they're another good example. Denver is in that same situation with some of their picks and some of the veterans that took less money. So, you know, there was a phase where people were trying to spread the money out amongst their last seven, which is now 10 players, because we are at 13. Now we're at 15 roster spots. And now people are like, okay, how are spots 8 through 15 at the minimum with the maximum asset value? So that has all built up, and these new general managers and new people see it. So I think that when you combine all of that, people are going to be willing to make deals and swap guys out just for change of scenery. Whereas we all wanted the small market teams to keep their players, and that's why they came up with the bird rights, and that's why they did, you know, all these things, and how can we keep players in small markets so the fans care? And we're seeing more than ever that the fans don't care. Eric just tried to trade his two centers, and they're in the second round of the playoffs. Like, just care about the brand on the front.
Yeah. You know, Isaiah Hartenstein's a big fan of the pod too, bro. That's messed up. He's gonna hear that, and
I want to keep Isaiah.
Yeah, he's trying to trade Mitch Rob and Randall.
I would. Yeah, they're racist. But Isaiah's black. All right. He was gonna make Pat Bev's blackest white guys list, but then he was black.
We couldn't make it.
Dante DiVincenzo. instead of have a whitest white player list, of which maybe our friend TJ McConnell might fan of the pod, friend of the pod.
They did that one too.
Oh, did they?
TJ McConnell was number one on there.
Gordon Hayward had to have made it.
TJ McConnell was playing 105 last night. It was awesome. Yeah, you better be nervous.
You better be nervous about this matchup.
Let's talk about this matchup briefly. Mm. Dan, you still picking the Pacers?
I'm still picking the Pacers. I think that, again, this is one I liked the Bogdanovich, no Robinson, play seven guys, I think beats the Pacers. I think extra guys just plays into the Pacers' hands. Because the Knicks do have a lot of miscommunications. I mean, if you watch them play, whether it's transition, whether it's their switches, whether it's, you know, getting the ball out of the hot hand, it's just they're exploitable in spurts of 2 to 5 minutes, and it's different people every time. And Brunson, if he runs back five games like this for a second series, then he deserves to be, you know, he deserves to go on strike and hold out for a max contract until this contract's out. But
so you're saying
I'm sticking Pacers.
In how many?
I think it's going to be five games. Wow. And I think in game one, Carlisle's going to stare down, and you're just going to see the sweat coming off of Thibodeau's head.
So you say Pacers win because they're so much deeper, because they run. They're just going to tire out these Knicks, confuse these Knicks, and they just will match.
That's my. And I think the Knicks had to expend more energy than they ever anticipated in the last series.
Good point.
Frank, what do you think?
It's tough, man. You know, as much of a devil's advocate, anti-Knicks guy I am to piss off T-Bird, I think I saw a lot of heart from him in this series, man. That's no pun intended. But like, they just got some guys. And I feel like the Pacers had a good series against the Bucks, but in those games with no Dame, where the Bucks are keeping up with them and Middleton was pretty much getting anything he wanted, and Middleton's kind of been a non-factor this season, and he just looked like championship 2021 Middleton. I was just like, these guys can't stop anyone. And I think this is a real like style clash of defense versus offense, running versus, you know, Thibodeau style grit and grind. But I just feel like the NBA is shifting towards, you know, that more defensive gritty thing winning this. It seems like that's what's happening this playoffs at least. So I'm going to go with the Knicks in seven.
All right. Remember when Eric said that Nesmith and Nembhard shouldn't be starters or players on your rotation if you were going to make the finals?
Starters.
And then last night, both Nembhard and Nesmith went off to eliminate the Bucks. I'm going to go Pacers in seven. I think your concerns, the concerns Frank noted, are definitely valid. They're a little bit suspect on defense. They do play very deep. They played a Bucks team that was just decimated and, you know, still got beat two games pretty handily. I just think these dudes play the right way. The ball moves. It's contagious. That stadium is rocking every time they have a home game. I think home court advantage is going to be a serious factor in this series, similar to the Cavs Magic series. And when it comes down to it, I agree. The Knicks do got dudes. They're really good. I think they got a lot of depth that they don't use enough. Hart had the series of his life. His shot is not that good. I don't think he's going to do that again. And I think I'm excited to see the Nesmith Hart matchup. And I think some, you know, Obi Toppin's starting to play well. He's coming for revenge. I just like the way that the Pacers play a lot better. I think it's much more cohesive and less dependent on one player. And you know, you saw Haliburton start to break out a little bit. He's still not where he was at the beginning of the season. But I think they just got a little bit more talent right now that they're going to put it together.
I do agree that the Pacers have more talent. I think a big weakness of the Knicks is their lack of depth. I don't know why we have so many guys in our team we would never even consider putting on the basketball court. Jacob Toppin, there's like five guys who are on the team who like...
You wouldn't play Burks?
I'd consider it, but he's done so terribly as a Knick. I think that is a big weakness for us and will limit our ability to advance, 16 games, so to speak, as Dan mentioned. But I do think Knicks will win in five. I could be wrong. Pacers could win the series. I think Pacers will get one in Indiana. Hopefully we'll defend home court. Obviously, I'm a homer. I think it's a lot closer than the series suggests, than my score suggests. I think, if Haliburton steps up and really shows that he's like a real gamer, like Trae Young did a few years ago or something, kind of have a come out, breakout. This is his opportunity, right? But
it was great last night.
Yeah.
Do you think that it benefits or hurts the Pacers having Nembhard and McConnell, who are smaller, able to guard Brunson and kind of chase him around? I just was thinking off the top of my head, like, okay, as you look up position by position, like Brunson could maybe get 60 on these guys because they're not if they're doing, like, who are you gonna like actually keep in front of Brunson? I don't know if he can withstand the energy of it, but I mean, those two guys really can't guard him. Or can they, because they're down eye to eye with him? And is his superpower being 5'10" with 6'2" and 6'3" guys? He's just mastered how to make 6'3" guys get hung up and get on their heels.
We'll see. I thought Kelly Oubre and Batum did a great job. I'm a strong Sixers. I think Sixers are a better team than the Pacers. Maybe I'm just wrong. We'll find out. But I look at every matchup, and I like OG on Pascal. I like Isaiah and Mitch on relative to Embiid, at least. Like, I think it's a better matchup. Although Turner, if he shoots 9 for 10 like he did against us in one game, that'll be tough. Naismith, just like stay home on it. I like Hart on him. I guess DiVincenzo is going to have to guard Haliburton with OG switching from time to time. That's going to be difficult, but not. I don't know if it's less or more difficult than Maxey and Brunson on Nembhard, and then on us. Yeah, I just like that matchup. Like, I think if they beat us, it's because the series goes long and we just get to, they just out they have more energy than we do. We run out of gas. But I like the matchups. That's it. We'll see. McConnell's maybe not going to go for those same fakes or same, things that Kelly Oubre and Batum went for. And maybe Nembhard is well coached in that way too, and more disciplined, and can be more crafty than the Sixers defenders were. We'll see.
My hot take is that any team still playing in the West at this point would smoke both these teams.
I agree.
Like, literally, yeah, Phoenix is like 20 points better than the Pacers and the Knicks.
Can we go to that series, to Phoenix?
Yeah.
What do you do? Run it right back?
Dan, did we cut you off though? Did you have one last thought on
that? No. I thought Frack made a great point, and it's like, we don't take that into consideration, and it's like, should the NBA be... we be seeding everybody? Should we be seeding these teams out and just letting it roll that way? Would that be better for TV and better for basketball? Or, is this part of the joy of it?
It's not the Civil War. We don't have to split the country down the middle. Like, let's just play basketball. The best teams play you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that shit's outdated in all sports. But to answer your question, Ruben, I definitely think that we're in the NBA, like, phase of like, is the super team not as relevant anymore? Or I guess when I say super team, I mean the 2 to 3 really good guys at the top, because it feels like we were in the era of that for a minute.
Started with Boston.
Yeah. And now it seems like, look what happened. The Suns, Beal, Booker, KD, they didn't have enough depth. They didn't have enough defense. They didn't have enough, even the Lakers, like AD and LeBron up top, lost to Minnesota, or Minnesota beat the Suns, and the Minnesota's just a better, like, all-around team. And it seems like, am I freezing?
Lose you, Frack?
Did I freeze?
There you go. Now you're back.
Yeah,
okay. We heard you. Yeah, it just seems like depth and, like, young, hungry guys are having more success than, like, up-top legacy talent for the first time in the NBA in a while. And I'm curious, Dan, especially if you think that's, like, if that's a change that's happening and why.
So if you trace the history of the big three, we go back to a time, I don't have the exact years of the first real, well, obviously Miami was the first real big three. It's kind of at the end of that first wave. What was that, 2000? When did LeBron go to Miami?
That was 2010, but would you consider that Boston big three, KG, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, is that a big three?
Look, I'm like the biggest KG fan ever, so I don't put people into that category, because when he was focused, that would have been, you could have probably put us four out on the court with him and he was going to find a way to will them to the finals. Yes, but I mean, when the big three kind of took off, the rules of the NBA were a little bit different. You know, offenses were looking to get to the elbows, get to the mid-range, throw the ball into the mid-post. The super centers were still around. Side pick and roll was big. Now you phase into 2010 to 2015, a lot more isolation for the stars, dribble isolation for guys that were bigger and defenses couldn't figure out, do we put a small guy on him? Do we double team him? What do we do? Oh, now he's deciding to kick it out for three. Then we get to the glory days of Golden State, where they were able to use the KD, Steph and Clay, super skill, super ball movement. Nobody can chase them around. They make you pay because their little three-man games are so good. Not just those three, but the three-sided action of spacing and non-ball screen cutting and handoffs was just never seen before. And I say that because over time, all of these coaches have learned how to guard all three of those. So no matter what three stars you put together, you need to make sure that they are balanced out. Like, people say Phoenix didn't have a point guard, the LA didn't have enough shooters, Tyrese and Embiid didn't have somebody that could really isolate, like all the wings they had weren't skilled enough to really go get a bucket. And I think that where the salary cap is, if you put that much money into it, you need to have the perfect complements to those players, and those players need to bring those complements. And unfortunately, I don't think Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker establish themselves in one spot long enough where there's veteran stars that are like, you know what, I want to go there and be the point guard, and I'm going to take a pay cut, and I'm going to only sign a two-year deal. All of the other big threes had that. They had guys take pay cuts. They built shooters around them that took pay cuts. They brought their friends in. Even the Clippers are kind of built that way a little bit now. The Celtics, I don't want to say that they're that way, but I think as you think about spending $150 million on three players, those are the questions that the front offices need to answer if they're going to do that. And again, we also live in a time now where if one player decides he's unhappy, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do if Devin Booker demands a trade or Kevin Durant demands a trade? And we could go through every team that way. But how you're not just going to be able to take three guys and put anybody around them, because all the coaches know how to guard now. And I think the first group of big threes, people hadn't seen those combinations of players. You know, people always talk about when Dwayne Wade and LeBron and Bosch, like, no one had ever seen Dwayne Wade and LeBron, like, guys like that just coming through the lane at, like, freight trains. Like, just didn't exist. you know, and same way each big three before was built. And now I just think teams know, coaches know how to take them out of it. And clearly Minnesota did. Clearly Denver, you know, dismantled AD and LeBron pretty badly. So I think that's, you know, that's just the different lenses to really look through it before you spend $50 million to add your third star.
I'd also highlight that this playoff seems to be like the playoffs of the role player, where the role player shines. You know, we saw TJ McConnell last night balling in the, even in the Dallas series, you see PJ Washington on the Knicks. It was Hart. It was McBride getting buckets. You know, the stars, it's not that they've been completely neutralized, but every game, it seems that the game swings upon which team, whichever team is a role player that plays the best. Even Bobby Portis in that last Milwaukee game. So, you know, I think depth is as important or more important than it ever was, which was kind of against the old playoff narrative where most rotations would shrink.
Yeah.
JD McDaniels.
Oh, jeez.
Whew. I'm pumped for that series.
And I think that that's good. And people like us who love basketball love it, but that's not good for Adam Silver. You know, with the first round of this has been not what the NBA wanted. As much as well as the in-season tournament went for driving eyeballs, I think the first round numbers will come back really good, especially because the Knicks Sixers games were so good and people did want to see them. But overall, this is trending with all the players that are superstars, so many of them already being out of the playoffs. This is trending into like people being like, yeah, I'm just going to throw in the baseball game.
Yeah. No LeBron, no Steph, no KD, no Booker, no Anthony Davis. Like so many of the stars are out. You know, now we got, you know, Luka, Ant, Shea, Joel's out, you know, so it's a new NBA for sure.
Yeah.
I'm still hoping the Clippers can just get two here. Do you guys think it's over?
He froze for you guys.
Yeah, he froze. Yeah, so that
froze for me.
Oh,
I hope that's not predicting the Clippers' future right there.
Yeah, I forgot. are Clippers out? What do you think Clippers are losing this?
I think it'll go seven.
I'm rooting for the Clippers because I chose them. But I will point out a little story for you guys. I mean, you know, when I was first getting into the basketball training stuff, I was lucky enough to spend a lot of time and train. Like Ty Lue was still in the league, so like out on these courts that are sitting next to me, it would be like pickup games with Ty Lue and Chauncey Billups and Al Harrington and Jared Jeffries, and I was just the secondary trainer. But the guy Joe Bunasar, who runs Impact in Vegas, was the main trainer. KG, like legit. I mean, we had Eric Dampier. Like there was different. I mean, I could run off lists of guys, and, you know, you're just a kind of rebounding and throwing the ball. You're not like doing anything other than keeping them in great shape. But when we moved to LA and moved the operation out there, Jared Dudley was one of the guys that kind of started coming to Las Vegas in those first 2 years I was out there. Well, when I was making these predictions early on, I didn't take that into account that Jared Dudley is now on the Dallas Mavericks bench. So I bring that up that there's kind of like rivalry, like pickup game rivalry from the summers with Jared Dudley and Ty Lue running back to like 2007, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009. And it just kind of obviously brings back memories every time you think of those things and just being grateful towards the game of basketball for all the opportunities it gave me. But also, like, thinking about, okay, when I said Ty Lue's like the man and he's going to outcoach Jason Kidd and Jason Kidd does all these things, I forgot about the Batman. And I was talking about Batman. I forgot about Robin. Like, Jason Kidd has Jared Dudley right there that knows exactly what Ty Lue's probably going to do from all those years of them hanging out and competing in the off seasons and then matching up. And now you're in here, and I could just see Jared Dudley on the bench the other night, and he's probably like, I know what they're going to do. I know where his mind's at. Because just like you guys play and pick up hoops, like you just, when you play with people all the time, you, it's like playing poker. Like you learn people's tells and you learn what they're doing. And again,
how I just beat Eric and Ruben last week.
I think they ran out of the James Harden gas. Like, I don't know where James Harden was so bad last game. And he's literally done this multiple times. And I mean, I want him to score 32 points tonight, but if he doesn't, they're done.
Kawhi's out tonight, right?
I think we got to assume so. I haven't read anything saying that he's playing. And even when he played, he was a shell of himself. Frack, I was trying to forget that, put that loss out of my mind. I got Mavs closing it out tonight at home. That's my finals pick.
I'm still rooting for the Clippers. It's hard to see a dynasty go to waste. So,
a dynasty?
Or what could have been a dynasty.
It's another big three that didn't work out. Or that has not worked out to date.
Fuck the big injuries.
The 3-1 lead that they lost to the Nuggets. Terrible.
We did see some PJ Tucker last game, though.
Love PJ Tucker.
And it totally backfired because Luka put him on skates like five. He was literally chasing Luka around like he was a puppy chasing a tennis ball.
Terrence Mann's been great.
Yeah.
No, but it's just, I mean, if you watch the game, like the Clippers were right there and they play Zubac and then Kleba and PJ Washington hit like a combined six threes in like a 4-minute span in the second quarter. And it changed the whole game because now they had to come out and chase. If those guys go 1-for-7 tonight, then it's the Clippers by 20. But Kleba's done it every single time that they've made the decision to send guys towards Luka and Kyrie. So maybe he'll be tired tonight, and that will give the Clippers a chance. But I think their only chance is clothesline Kyrie early in the game and hope that he hobbles to the locker room.
Someone needs to put Jokic on his ass.
Oh, Markieff Morris tried that. Didn't work out, huh?
Jericho Sin is just wait until the finals.
He
has one job.
Let's talk about these other series. Let's talk about these other series real quick in the West. Let's Nuggets, Wolves, and Thunder, Mavs, Clippers. I'll say I think Thunder, you know, advanced to the West Conference Finals, probably in 5 or 6 with either team. And I think the Nuggets advance in 6, maybe 7. It's my picks. What are you guys predicting or thinking about as you think about these series?
Start us off, Dan.
My concern for both Denver and Oklahoma City will continue to be the benches. They're just both one player going down away from potentially even getting swept. That's how big of a drop-off it is with the short rotations. And again, Oklahoma City isn't necessarily a short rotation. Those guys are just overachieving so much, and their overachievement is dependent upon the units, you know, dependent upon how they match up with the other team's second unit. So again, if the second unit's big, they'll space him in attack. If the second unit's small, they'll isolate the weaker defenders. And I just don't think if they have to get past player 8 for any reason, foul trouble, suspension, injury. Like again, as soon as we saw Jamal Murray hobble off the court that game, we were all like, the Lakers are coming back. With all these other injuries, you just can't discount that happening. But if all things are equal, the Nuggets just seem to have another level of like making the other team just spin their head off on every possession. Like it's like hilarious to watch. And that just means that no matter how much you prepare, no matter what your game plan is, they just know what you're thinking and they're just going to make you pay. And if you try to slow them down, they're actually better when you slow them down this year than they were last year.
Crack.
You know, I think I'm in agreement with you, Ruben, that this Mavs Clippers series, I think they're going, whoever wins it is going to beat the Thunder. And, you know, I think the Thunder had a really easy series with the Pelicans, without Zion. I don't think it's going to, I think it really depends on Kawhi's health. I could see them beating the Clippers with just James and Paul George. I think both Kyrie and Luka have been on such a sick one that I see them outlasting the Thunder, and especially if the role players keep stepping up. So I don't know. I think, and then if the Clippers can pull it out and Kawhi comes back, you know, maybe Eric's hopes for a dynasty aren't dead in the injury crypto arena or wherever their new arena is going to be. But yeah, and then Nuggets Wolves. I think the Wolves present some unique challenges for the Nuggets. I think they split the season series. The big lineups are tougher for Jokic, and I think all the wings that the Wolves have that are just able to bounce around, it's going to be harder for Jokic to master chess the game, because there's so much length and so much stuff happening at the rim that it's not as easy as he had it with the Lakers. But all that being said, I think the Nuggets are winning the championship this year. They look great. Jamal Murray's becoming him like he always does at this time of the year. So I got the Nuggets.
All right. I'm going to zag. I think that the Nuggets' clear advantage in that series against the Lakers was just general size. Aaron Gordon had his way, I think, 3 of the 4 games, and just backbroke the Lakers on offensive rebounds, on doubles to Jokic that went straight to Aaron Gordon. And I think Michael Porter Jr. was also just shooting over whoever was guarding him, whether it was Reeves or someone Reeves' size. They didn't really put Rui on him. It was like Reeves. It was Russell. He'd get Vincent switched onto him. And I think just with the Wolves, they've got so much size. Towns is going to be guarding either Jokic or Gordon. McDaniels is probably going to be guarding Porter Jr. Maybe he'll put him on Murray to start. But I just think their length is going to prove a serious factor, and it's going to make Jokic a lot more of a scorer, of a shooter, which he's going to do great. He's going to put up incredible numbers. But I think that this one goes 7. And I'm all aboard the Ant train. I think he is that dude. I don't think that anyone's got an answer for him. And I think they win in 7.
Got a Nuggets hater here. It's 2 series in a row.
I think the Wolves are just structured in a weird way, right? It's like Ant's amazing, but Conley, okay. Like Jaden McDaniel, like besides Ant, and you know, Kat and Gobert, that's like a lot of like, I don't know. It feels a bit weird.
McDaniels is 6'10".
I know. So he's big too, but he can't really shoot like that, right? And Conley's not like an elite. Maybe I'm wrong.
Is he can shoot.
So the people that score, that can like,
you know, Eric Fries for you guys too.
Can you hear? The people on the Wolves that can create their own shot are Ant and Kat, and Kat, right? But Kat is very stagnant. I don't love their offense.
You don't think Conley can create his own shot? Or McDaniels?
Not at an elite level.
We're also getting into the second round of the playoffs. Was some of the tough guy stuff from Minnesota real tough guy stuff? Or was it just a lot of bark? That would be kind of what I would be interested. I hope it gets to that point. You know, I hope that it's 1-1 and in game 3 there's a physical confrontation. Because, again, if it was bite, Minnesota's going to get through the offensive woes. and impose their will. If it was just Bark, they have some implodability that could be epic.
Yes. Put Jokic on his ass.
Because again, I don't know. I don't think any of those guys ever won, right? Who's been a winner?
None of them.
Gobert from Minnesota. Like Gobert won some stuff with the national team, maybe.
Conley won a bit with the Grizz.
Conley got to the playoffs, I guess, with the Grizz, and it wasn't, you know, at Georgia, so it was laughable. McDaniels was Washington, right? They were laughable. Like these guys, it's at some point the winner's heart comes out. I think that's what the Knicks had going for them. You know, as for, that was Frack, you brought the, like, I think that the Knicks had that, the Villanova three, Bogdanovich is out, here we would band of brothers come together. Like there's something about that in sports. I don't know about the SF Men's League, if that same stuff happens with the way that you put your teams together.
Oh yeah, it does.
If Frack is general manager and star point guard, then, you know, he would have a better view. But that in sports, it happens. You know, there's a combustibility factor for guys that are historic losers when things go wrong. And there's a come together factor for guys that been winners their whole lives.
We'll send you some footage.
We actually had a showdown in Frack. Frack took us to town.
Game was tied 40-40, 6 minutes to go. Frack comes in the game, six man off the bench. We miss, whap, wipes the three. Next play, turnover, whap, hits another one. Our team needs to call timeout. 6 point run, never really could come back after that.
It's different.
Frack, I just want to.
You say,
Frack, I missed you last Friday. But I really did like the one thing that you did this week where it was you and the guy from New York and then you merged at the end. That was awesome.
Oh, thank you, man.
I don't know what that was. Music,
I appreciate that.
I have no idea what that's called or where you're going with it, but I thought that was like super creative.
It's called Foursquare. I appreciate you tuning in, man. And yeah, the SF Men's League, it's not like the NBA because, you know, they brought their little Villanova brotherly team. They have all this history and chemistry, but just like one star player can like take it over the top. Doesn't matter like the depth, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Who are you referring to as that star player?
This one guy who looks like Jimmer Fredette.
Exactly. Well, we'll see you in the playoffs or the finals, perhaps. But anyways, shall we wrap up there? I guess
we got the Cleveland Orlando's here in a little bit. That's the only one we didn't really cover.
Yeah, who are we picking?
Like the rest of the country.
I mean, they're on ESPN tonight. They're on ESPN tonight.
I got Cavs.
ESPN Ocho presents Cavaliers versus Magic.
I got Cavs winning. Whoever wins is going to lose to Boston in five or six or sweep. I don't know.
Who you got, Dan?
I mean, I said Orlando from the beginning. Obviously, they need to win tonight. It was interesting that Cleveland was better without Jared Allen. I thought that was interesting. So tonight should be fun to watch. And again, it just. I mean, it's Celtics in four. So, unfortunately, we're going to get chipped out of some games.
Who do you got, Frack?
I got Cleveland, and just off Donovan Mitchell vibes from past playoff appearances. I think they'll get a couple games against the Celtics.
A couple. Yeah, all right, maybe. I got Magic tonight. Game going seven. And then I got Magic winning game seven in Cleveland.
Wow.
And then four in Celtics.
I'd be willing to bet you on the Cleveland Orlando win if you'd like.
Like tonight's game?
That's a good counter offer.
You guys, yeah, we should have like a score counter for your guys' bets on some on-screen graphics to see who's up.
I guarantee.
I'm going to use the money that I win from these bets to pay for animations. For
you're going to use it for your game one ticket on Tuesday.
Yes, sir. I already paid him $100 because the Knicks are seed.
I'm going to try to go.
Going, T-Bird?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's in New York right now.
That changes my perspective on the series.
Yeah, exactly. what were the bets? The bets were that Knicks would be four seed this year. And then last year, I think we had a bet on the Blazers. Maybe the Knicks going further than the Blazers or something.
I'm over too.
The Blazers didn't get relegated, right? They're letting them come back.
Oh, yeah. Scoot Henderson, baby. Scoot to Ayton. Dominating. Plus whatever pick we get.
The existing bet is about who ends their career better, Jalen Brunson versus Tyrese Halliburton, right? So this series is going to be a big telltale of that bet, too.
Let's go, baby.
And then next episode we'll get into. I just found out Lakers fired Darvin Ham. I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into some of these implosions, and what this means in the offseason. We got the Sixers this week, or we just covered the Sixers, so it'd be good to get into some more team stuff as well.
Sounds good. He's a victim of Darvinism.
Bars.
All right, should we wrap there?
Yeah, well, maybe just give a quick close. Who do you want to be the Lakers' next coach?
I saw J.J. Redick was on there.
I think Brown.
If I were to pick, I'd say Ty Lue. Give me Ty Lue.
I'll save it for the next episode. We can go into detail. I would not re-sign LeBron.
Wow.
Basically, they're going to re-sign LeBron. So knowing that, I think that you obviously probably have to do they have to do everything that they can do, but to get Ty Lue. I think JJ would be fun and it would be entertaining. But again, having trained JJ and being around, the likelihood of a first-year coach really being able to be successful, I couldn't recommend that to a team that I'm rooting for, kind of. So we can dive deep into that one if you want.
Well, we know JJ is listening to this, so we will dive into it and we'll invite him on the pod as well.
This does open up a big gap in the podcasting world that we could be able to fill if JJ didn't go there.
I mean, love you, JJ, my guy.
Awesome. Let's wrap on that. Until next week, boys.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Have a great